At Salesforce, we're all about asking more of AI. Questions like, where is the data going? Is it private? Is it secure? Is it ready to use now? How about now? And if not now, when? And how? Get answers you can trust from Salesforce at askmoreofai.com.
Welcome to Tech News Briefing. It's Friday, September 8th. I'm Zoe Thomas for The Wall Street Journal. After Elon Musk bought Twitter for $44 billion last October, he promised users fairness and transparency. But instead, our reporting shows the platform, designed to be the world's public square, is being driven in large part by Musk's impulses. Reporter Georgia Wells is going to join us to discuss the controversial reinstatements, the favors for friends, and the content policies that Musk has added. First, though, as we told you yesterday, Apple is having trouble in China. This time, it's coming from smartphone competitor Huawei. The Chinese hardware giant is selling a phone capable of ultra-fast data connectivity that competes with the iPhone. It comes as Beijing ordered some officials not to use foreign devices, including Apple's. The iPhone maker has dominated China's high-end phone market in recent years, particularly since Huawei abandoned plans to make phones with 5G. But Huawei's new phone offers 5G-like speeds and capabilities. It sold out within hours of its release. Apple is expected to release its iPhone 15 next week. Microsoft is funding a new approach to carbon removal. The tech giant announced it will use carbon-absorbing rocks to meet its climate goals. While most of the world's efforts to remove carbon from the atmosphere suck it out of the air using giant vacuum-like devices, Microsoft is funding a new technology that uses crushed-up limestone. The deal is one of the largest purchases of carbon credits ever. And our climate finance reporter, Amrit Ramkumar, says it equates to offsetting the annual emissions of around 70,000 gas-powered cars.
The Microsoft deal is another signal that governments and big companies are no longer viewing carbon removal as a niche tool to fight climate change. They're viewing it as a core product that we need to really accelerate if we're going to have any chance again of avoiding the worst effects of global warming. So you're really seeing companies and governments start to go big in this space. And even though some people are opposed to carbon removal and worry about it being misused and giving fossil fuel companies a social license to continue polluting, this is big governments and big companies saying the science is clear. We need to do a lot of this now and we need to do it as soon as possible.
And as we've talked about on the show before, many U.S. tech companies want to create their own versions of a super app where users can send messages, make purchases, play games, and more. Super apps like WeChat exist in China, but despite efforts by Meta, PayPal, X, and others, they haven't taken off in the States. Our colleagues on the Journal video team spoke with Amy Webb, the CEO of the Future Today Institute, about why the U.S. doesn't have a super app yet.
We're not really used to using one app for everything. And that's why when companies like Facebook in the past have tried to launch singular apps that do more than one thing at a time, consumers have largely rejected them. A lot of people distrust the big tech companies, and the idea of a single tech company offering us an app that really houses so many different things, from online payments to bill management to health records, is kind of scary to people. I don't think at this point technology companies are interested in making it look like that they are consolidating their control over our digital lives any more than they already have. I mean, that would just invite regulatory scrutiny.
To hear more from Amy Webb about how super apps work, check out the video on WSJ.com. All right, in a moment, there's an old adage: measure twice, cut once. But if you're Elon Musk running Twitter, former employees say that's become a lot more like just cut. We'll discuss how the strategy is playing out for the company when we come back.
At Salesforce, we're all about asking more of AI. Questions like, where is the data going? Is it private? Is it secure? Are you sure? Are you sure you're sure? Is anyone really sure? For sure? Get answers you can trust from Salesforce at askmoreofai.com.
Elon Musk closed his purchase of Twitter nearly a year ago. And since then, he's changed a lot about the platform, including its name. It's now X. And despite a promise to have a more equitable and open stance on what content stays and goes, Musk is making many choices based on his feelings. That's according to people familiar with his actions, who also say Musk is generally taking a much more hands-on approach than previous leaders to how the company is run. What's that mean for Twitter? X. You'll hear me use both of those. Our technology reporter, Georgia Wells, is here to discuss that. So, Georgia, tell us about some of the decisions Musk's made.
So, one example is Kanye West, who is now known as Ye. In December, he posted an image of a swastika that was merged with a Star of David, and Twitter kicked him off. Shortly after that, he started reaching out to Elon Musk, asking to have his account back. The reason is that Kanye West has been considering a 2024 presidential run, and his advisors really wanted him to get back on Twitter. So historically, Twitter would have had a really formal review where it looked like kind of the infraction that the person committed and whether or not there were rules that would allow that person to come back. In this case, Elon Musk reached out to his new CEO, Linda Yaccarino, and they decided if Ye agreed to abide by their policies, and if he wasn't able to make money on his account, sure, he could come back onto Twitter. And a lawyer representing Kanye West declined to comment.
So that's an example of someone with connections to Musk being able to reach out to him directly. You know, you mentioned Linda Yaccarino, though. She was appointed CEO. What role is she supposed to be playing?
So Linda Yaccarino is now CEO of Twitter. Our understanding, though, is that her big mandate is really around getting advertisers to come back to the platform. And so she's trying to smooth things over with advertisers. Interestingly, the Trust and Safety Unit of Twitter, or now the company known as X, that's the unit that makes decisions about the content allowed. Elon and Linda are jointly overseeing that particular unit, which is an unusual power-sharing agreement. But our understanding from people on that team is really Elon is still calling a lot of those shots.
Did we hear from either Musk or Yaccarino for this story?
Musk and his lawyers didn't respond to requests for comment, and X declined to make Musk or Linda Yaccarino available for interviews.
You spoke with a number of former employees. What did they tell you about Musk's leadership style based on what they saw before they left?
So former employees had very kind of illuminating descriptions of how old Twitter and now new Twitter are running. So old Twitter, they said, would measure twice, cut once, often more than they had to. Under Elon Musk, the description was, they don't measure, they just cut. So Elon Musk appears to want to make change and leave his mark very, very quickly on the platform.
Tell us about some of the specific changes that he made and how former employees felt about those.
So Elon wanted to ban prominent users such as Jack Dorsey from tweeting about competitors. Employees went to Elon and said, we think this is a bad idea, but we can talk about a policy. Elon pressured them to just forge ahead and institute a ban against tweeting about certain competitors. Meanwhile, employees were scrambling to write a policy justification to allow this. Then when they announced this policy, it received so much backlash on Twitter that then he told them to scrap it. But many of the employees felt frustrated that when they told him why they thought it wasn't a very good idea, he did not listen to the employees, but he did hear the feedback on Twitter.
Have employees themselves been affected by some of the policies that Musk has put in place?
So old Twitter had this program to protect prominent users on the platform. It was called Project Guardian, and it would flag potentially abusive tweets so that the company could kind of more quickly respond to harassment that was bubbling up. When Elon Musk arrived, he said that he didn't want any of the company's employees to be in the program because he felt that people who take a job at Twitter should understand that online harassment can come with the territory. Many employees pushed back, and their rationale was that Elon Musk himself sometimes contributed to kind of putting employees in harm's way. But Elon Musk overruled them, and he took all the employees out of this program. And then days later, he tweeted about the company's former head of trust and safety, Yoel Roth. And in his tweet, he incorrectly implied that it looked like Roth had argued in favor of children being able to access adult internet services. And some of the users on Twitter interpreted Musk's tweet as like Musk calling Roth a pedophile, and they posted calls for Roth's death. It got so intense that Yoel Roth actually fled his home and ended up selling it.
How big of a change overall is Musk's strategy compared to how Twitter was run before?
Musk's strategy represents a complete 180 to how Twitter used to be managed. In the past, the company had this very kind of sprawling at times set of rules that dictated the content and the user interactions that were allowed on the platform. And the intent that former employees told me was that the company really didn't want a single person to become the arbiter of what was allowed on Twitter. But it wasn't without its downsides. The company was often criticized as being slow. And so when Musk arrived, so many employees were cautiously optimistic because they wanted someone to kind of breathe some new life into this platform and help it be more nimble. But when Musk started unilaterally making his own decisions, a lot of these employees kind of reversed their stance because they still wanted to see like checks and balances on the power of who gets to say what's allowed on like the world's biggest microphone.
That was our tech reporter, Georgia Wells. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you, Zoe.
And that was it for Tech News Briefing. Today's show was produced by Anthony Bansi. I'm your host, Zoe Thomas. Our supervising producer is Melanie Roy. Our development producer is Aisha Al-Muslim. Our deputy editors are Scott Salloway and Chris Zinsley. And Falana Patterson is the Wall Street Journal's head of news audio. We'll be back on Monday with a new show. Thanks for listening.